Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to the most important and the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interest, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law. Because it's liberating, it's enriching, and it's empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, you can take issue with the host, or you can add to what is being said, 877-300-7645. I'm going to begin with a new story. This story is takes place in the same place that we have spent the previous five programs, but it is fresh. This occurred today. Reuters is reporting 7 bomb explosions killed 26 people and wounded 67 in the Iraqi capital on Monday, today. Police and medics said as security forces battled Sunni Muslim militants around the western cities of Fallujah and Ramadi. Before I read to you the next line of the Reuters article. 7 bomb explosions. There weren't 7 bomb explosions during the 7 years that marked Saddam Hussein's last decade in office. 7 in one day. There weren't 26 people killed a year in terrorist acts during Saddam Hussein's last 7 years. There were 26 people killed today. This is the Iraq that America's invasion created. And it's worse than just 7 bomb explosions because, first of all, 2 of the 7 were Shiites terrorizing and bombing Sunnis. 5 were the other way around, with Sunnis bombing Shiites. So it's not a monolithic situation here, as the United States wants to paint it, with Sunnis uniformly acting up and trying to disrupt the Shiite government of Iraq. Also, it is the Shiite army. The army now that America has equipped and has trained. We spent $50 billion doing so, providing the Iraqis with weapons that we painted Allahu Akbar on the side. Allah's the greatest. Those $50 billion worth of weapons and training were deployed against the civilians living in the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi. We empowered the government to murder its own people using our weapons. Now, we use that exact same excuse for our reason that it was appropriate to go into Iraq in the first place. You know, we said, oh, Saddam Hussein's a bad guy. He gassed 3,000 of his own citizens. Now, mind you, we didn't bother to tell the whole story, that at the time that he gassed the Kurds were using Iranian weapons in the midst of the Iranian-Iraqi war to fight the Iraqis inside of Iraq. So these were Iraqi citizens that were traitorous, that used Iranian weapons to attack and capture not only Iraqi towns, but to bludgeon Iraqi military units. And so it was in response to his military's failure to be able to effectively combat the combination of the Iranians and the Kurds fighting on their behalf that the gas was deployed. We don't want Americans to know, we never tell the full context that this occurred in the midst of a war, nor do we tell anyone in the world that it was America that supplied the gas that was used. Yeah, we did it. And we heralded it, the use of the gas when it was used against the Iranians. We even provided Saddam Hussein with intelligence to show him where to deploy such weapons. Saddam was an American ally. He was equipped by America. He was the enemy of our enemy and thus our friend. We don't want to tell that part of the story. The other part of the story that America doesn't want you to know is that Saddam Hussein was a more effective combatant against fundamentalist Islamic terrorism than perhaps any other leader in the world. He and Osama bin Laden were arch enemies. As a secular dictator, Saddam Hussein knew the consequence of allowing the likes of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or any one of the Muslim Brotherhood's Islamic terrorist organizations into his country. They would fester. They would kill. And they would continue to kill until they established a religious government. And even then, they would kill all of their opponents. There would be no end to the killing. And so as ruthless as Saddam Hussein was, he was an effective safeguard against the most ruthless enemy in today's world, fundamentalist Muslims. And so when the United States deposed him and then gave Iraq to Iran, we created this mess that we're witnessing today. And the reality is that America wants you to believe that it went into Iraq because of its war on terrorism. But there was no terrorism in Iraq before we invaded. And after the invasion, terrorism is the mainstay of Iraq. So if the United States went in there allegedly to fight a war against terrorism, then we ought not ever invade any other country ever again, because it went from essentially no terrorism to the most terrorized place on earth. Our invasion was counterproductive by any standard. This article continues to read, the bloodiest attack incurred in the mainly Shiite Muslim Abu Dishir district in southern Baghdad, where a car bomb near a crowded market killed 7 people and wounded 18. What's interesting is that the Shiite districts in southern Baghdad were among the most deadly for Americans, second only to the carnage that took place when American generals stupidly sent Americans to fight street battles in the Sunni districts of Fallujah and Ramadi. But second only to them, the most ruthless battles were the street battles that Americans fought against Shiite Muslim militias in the outskirts of Baghdad. And now it's those very Shiite militias that America has provided $50 billion worth of arms. And talk about stupid. Sunni insurgents, some of them linked to Al-Qaeda, the story reads, are widely blamed for the surge in violence in the past year, apparently aimed at undermining the Shiite-led government and provoking a return to all-out sectarian strife. I'm not fond of those who pretend to be journalists today. There are so many errors in that statement. They aren't insurgents. They're fundamentalist Muslims. You can call them jihadists. You can call them mujahideen. You can call them salaf. Salaf means that they are fundamentalists in Islam. In fact, you can just call them Sunnis, because Sunni tells you everything you need to know. Sunni is based upon the Arabic word sunnah. Sunnah is an extraordinarily important religious term in Arabic, because it speaks of the example of Muhammad. It is the words and the deeds of Muhammad. And so a Sunni Muslim is a Muslim who is focused on living their life the same way Muhammad lived his, following Muhammad's example. That's what makes them terrorists. Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. Muhammad was a rapist, he was a pedophile, he was a slave trader, he was a kidnapper. He was amongst the most repulsive people who has ever lived. That's his example. And so as a Sunni Muslim, they're following Muhammad's example. There is no one in Iraq that is linked to Al-Qaeda. I say that because we know that to be fact. And the reason we know that to be fact is that when America went in to murder Osama bin Laden rather than bring him back for trial, which would have been vastly more useful in coming to understand who the enemy is as it relates to these terrorist attacks, that we received all of the correspondence that Osama bin Laden had, the letters that he had been written and the responses, or typically the lack of response to them. Osama bin Laden despised the Islamic State of Iraq. That's the Sunni jihadists have unified under what they call the Islamic State of Iraq. And Osama bin Laden despised them. His letters to them were all condemning. He had absolutely no influence over them. They were not a franchise. He was not directing them. They were not following his instructions. They were rogue. The only commonality, the only link between Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State of Iraq is Islam. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, there is a complete myth that they are Sunni insurgents. They're not insurgents, they're fundamentalists. The second myth is that they are linked to Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden despised the Islamic State of Iraq. He also despised the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist organization known as Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. He wrote to the leaders of both organizations regularly and said that he wanted nothing to do with them, that their strategy was deeply flawed, and he got no response. He had no influence over them. And now you don't have to be the sharpest tool in the shed to recognize if the founder of an organization like Al-Qaeda is consistently writing to organizations like the Islamic State of Iraq and the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, saying, I want nothing to do with you, that I am disgusted by your strategy, that you're not listening, and that we share nothing in common in terms of the way that you are behaving. You know, it has got to be moronic to continue to make this connection. You know, today, there's effectively one member of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and he's publicly facing the same disrespect that was Osama bin Laden in the last 5 to 8 years, maybe even 10 years of his life. Ayman al-Zawahiri has been public in him saying that the Islamic State of Iraq, which is now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ought not be fighting al-Nusra Front. And yet they are. And so he's being disregarded too. This link to Al-Qaeda is purely and totally a myth that is being promoted for the purpose of political correctness. Of people not having the good judgment, not having the intellectual honesty to report the truth. The Sunnis are affiliated with Islam. They are fundamentalist Muslims. They have not corrupted their religion. Their religion has corrupted them. That is the only possible explanation for what is occurring based upon the evidence. And yet, universally, politicians and the media and the military lie. They misrepresent the facts. This is serious, folks. When you misrepresent the nature of those trying to kill you, saying that the very basis of what inspires them to be jihadists and mujahideens is good, in fact, great, and that there's some irrelevant symptom out there that is the problem, then you doom your own people's fate. That when you send troops out to fight them, you're committing murder. That you're making a bad situation worse with every word and every deed. To go on here, it says that the Sunni insurgents are widely blamed for the surge in violence in the past year. No. Again, wake up. It's not the Sunnis who are responsible for the surge in violence. It's America. There was no civil war between Sunni and Shia Muslims in Iraq, a country deeply divided between the two, when Saddam Hussein was the dictator. We replaced him, and the moment we did so, they began to kill one another. And the only thing that diminished their lust for murdering one another is when Americans were there and they had a favored target that they both could attack. And during the time that we were there, it was Shia and Sunni, both of whom waged jihad against the Americans, the invading crusaders and their nomenclature. This gets on to say that their angst is apparently aimed at undermining the Shiite-led government. Apparently? I mean, good grief. Apparently? In Islam, it's not just that Muslims are ordered by the Quran and Hadith and by Muhammad's example to wage war against Jews. It's not that they are ordered to wage war against just Christians. It's not that they are ordered to wage war against all non-believers. In Islam, because of the ninth surah, Muslims are ordered to wage war, to attack and to kill any Muslim who does not fight alongside of them in jihad. And so they view each other, Sunni and Shiite, as infidels because of the Quran. We'll be back in a moment. Something that should be stunning to Americans, should be absolutely bemoan every moment of this, is when there's the realization that one of the things that is said here in this statement is actually true. Now, let me read it up to this point. But Sunni insurgents, some of them linked to Al-Qaeda, are widely blamed for the surge of violence in the past year, apparently aimed at undermining the Shiite-led government. Now, think about that. Just full stop for a moment. You had a Sunni government. Now, it wasn't a religious government. It was a secular government, not a sectarian government. It was a government where the leader came from a Sunni tribe, but he himself didn't do anything that would be remotely considered Islamic. And that's the government that you effectively used to keep the Iranian Shiite government at bay. And now what you have in Iraq is a Shiite government that, rather than keeping the Iranians across the border at bay, thwarting their ambitions to not only destroy Israel, but also the United States, now what you've done is you have given Iraq to Iran. I mean, just think of that and how that can be read by politicians who enabled this and them not to take accountability for their stupidity. It's beyond me. But worse than that, you have both sides of the aisle saying, you know, the answer for this is let's provide more Hellfire missiles, more Apache helicopters, more gunships, more tanks, more artillery to the Iranian government of Iraq so they can go kill the Sunnis. And then across the border, let's provide missiles and advanced weapons to the Sunnis so they can go and kill the Shiites. Now, on one side of the border, we're arming the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria as freedom fighters. On the other side, we're arming the Sunnis, or the Shias, who are in league with Iran, so they can go kill them. And there's not a single American politician, no one in the media, that is saying, wait a minute, this is really stupid. There's no one in the military saying, oh, man, look at the mess that we made. So if you can be that stupid, that counterproductive, that moronic, that grotesquely immoral, if you can exercise judgment that is that flawed, do you want such people in control of the largest military on earth? Do you want such people in control of your country? Are you going to show patriotic allegiance to those individuals? You're as bad as they are if you do. This is an awakening moment for America and Americans. Time to recognize that you've been duped, that you ought not be patriotic, that you ought not support your military, that you ought not vote for one party over the other, because both parties are absolutely dead wrong on this issue. And if you continue to support them, if you continue to embrace patriotism and wave the flag at the military, and when the announcer says, you know, take your hats off, put your hand over your heart, and sing the national anthem with you know, reverence to your country, and you do it, and you're as bad as those that engaged American weaponry and American troops to make a bad situation worse and haven't learned their lesson and are still supplying the weapons to kill people on both sides of this war. This last line is equally stupid. Provoking a return to all-out sectarian strife. All-out sectarian strife. You know, they have a word for all-out strife when it exists in a country. And they even have a word for a more descriptive term for sectarian. All-out strife is called a civil war. That's what we caused in Iraq. That's what we caused in Syria. It's called a civil war. Now, in this case, it's not like a civil war in the United States where the North wants to prevent the South from forming their own country, from seceding from the Union. It's not compulsion here, somehow mythically linked to freedom. No. In this case, it's the two dominant religious sects of Islam going after each other with a vengeance. We ought not call it sectarian strife. We ought to call it a Sunni-Shiite civil war. And we ought to see Syria in exactly the same light. And when we recognize that Sunnis are killing Shia and Shia are killing Sunni, and that the United States is on one side in Iraq and on the other side in Syria right across the border, we ought to examine the sanity of that. This article has three additional paragraphs. Let me share them with you. It reads, Al-Qaeda militants and their local allies. Now, Al-Qaeda had no presence whatsoever in Iraq prior to the American invasion. And after the eradication of the small number of Al-Qaeda members that there were in Afghanistan, an organization the United States itself created during Jimmy Carter's administration with Zbigniew Brzezinski and with Robert Gates, who's out touting his new book, that they played an extraordinarily small role. Even after the American invasion and they were allowed to come into Iraq, their role was de minimis. This is strictly fundamentalist Sunnis against America, fundamentalist Shiites against America, and now that America is no longer there, the Sunnis and Shiites against one another. Now, it's true that the Sunnis have regained control of Fallujah and parts of Ramadi. They are, in fact, exploiting resentment among minority Sunnis against the government for policies perceived, it says, as unfairly penalizing their once dominant community. In Islam, there is no sense of fairness. None. Most religions aren't fair, but Islam is probably the worst of a bad lot in this regard. There's no sense, there's no desire for fairness. When Sunnis control Shias, and Shias are a minority, the Shias are treated as if they're infidels. They have no rights. They're terrorized. Their homes are plundered. Their women are raped. It's been going on for 1,400 years. When Shia are in control over Sunnis, as they are in Iraq now, and they are in Iran, and they are in Syria, then they show exactly the same kind of behavior. Why? Because they're both Muslims. The difference between the two boils down to who's in charge. There are no differences in the religion. There's no difference in their perspective of Muhammad. There's no difference in terms of the texts that comprise the basis of the religion. The earliest five texts are the same for both. There is absolutely no difference in the God, no difference in the Quran. The only difference is who's in charge. It's kind of like the rift between Roman Catholicism and the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Copts and the Russian Orthodox Church, there, even the Anglican Church in the UK. All the same religion. It's just who's in charge. That's the difference, really, in Shia and Sunni Islam. The next line reads, five of Monday's bombs targeted mainly Shiite districts of the capital, while two were in mostly Sunni areas. This is Sunnis terrorizing and killing Shia, and Shia terrorizing and killing Sunnis. There is no solution for this. It cannot be resolved. The only thing that kept it from mushrooming out of control was a dictatorship in Iraq. And with that gone, we have an explosion of Sunni versus Shia terrorism, both in Iraq and in Syria. Cannot be resolved. There's no solution for this. Fighting again flared around Fallujah and Ramadi, anti-government tribesmen. Now, that would be an accurate description. It'd be more accurate to say anti-government Sunni tribesmen attacked an army barracks northwest of Fallujah and destroyed multiple Humvee vehicles before army helicopter gunships forced them to retreat. So on one side, you've got Humvees and attack helicopters. On the other side, you've got automatic rifles, both weapons provided by the United States. It's just that the government army is more powerful than is the civilian resistance. But the awakening program provided the rifles that were used to attack the army barracks, and it was the helicopter gunship that scared them away. By the way, when, as in the case of the Sunni tribesmen in Fallujah and Ramadi, when they attack a government barracks, an army barracks, they're not terrorists. That's a guerrilla tactic. Night and day difference. a guerrilla tactic versus a terrorist act. America fought most of its Revolutionary War using guerrilla tactics. That's when a militia fights in a non-standard way, a not straight up way against a military or those who support the military. The IRA, for example, in Ireland were principally used guerrilla tactics. The Taliban in Afghanistan, while they will on occasion use terrorist tactics, they almost, 90% of their attacks are guerrilla tactics, where one armed group fights another armed group in a non-conventional way. It's the only way that those who are empowered with automatic rifles can wage war against those empowered with attack helicopters, with tanks. It is a perfectly normal and reasonable strategy under the circumstances. And so we ought to get our terms right so we know who is killing whom and why. We'll be back in a moment. I want to share a related story. This is from Fox News. And I only saw this on Fox. It is an extraordinarily important story. And yet, never saw it in the mainstream media. And I don't even know if Fox reported it on television or just as part of the Fox News service that feeds out headline stories on the Internet. A United Nations agency pulled an exhibit on the Jewish people's 3,500-year relationship. And they put that in quotes, 3,500-year relationship, to the land of Israel. After the Arab League launched a last-minute protest, according to the report. The exhibit entitled People, Book, Land, the 3,500-year relationship of the Jewish people and the land of Israel, was created jointly by the Jewish human rights group, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and was scheduled to open on January 20th, I think that would be today, at UNESCO's Paris headquarters. But less than a week before it was to open, UNESCO informed the SWC that it was canceling it because the Arab League had claimed the exhibit, and I quote, could create potential obstacles related to the peace process in the Middle East, unquote. Think of that. Here's the truth. The Jewish people, whose real name are Yehudim, means related to Yah, and relating to Yah. Yah is short for Yahweh. It's the name of the one and only God, the only credible presentation of God. He says he has one name, it's Yahweh. His people, his chosen people, were named after him. They are Yehudim, related to Yah. They begin to build their relationship with the land of Israel around 2000 BCE. So 4,000 years ago. This occurs when Yahweh asks Abram, who was in Ur of the Chaldeans, which would be Babylon. Ur was the capital of Suma, which was part of the Babylonian and Assyrian Mesopotamian empires, to walk away from his country and to walk with him to the promised land. There, Abraham, who is reaches 100 years old, and his wife Sarah, who is 90, have a son. His name is Yishak. He is the first child of the covenant. Yishak means laughter, which tells you everything you need to know about the purpose and the nature of the covenant. And then Yahweh reaffirms his covenant with Ishmael. Excuse me, not Ishmael, but with Yishak, expressly saying that Ishmael, who was the son of Abraham through Hagar, who was an Egyptian, would be expressly excluded from the covenant. And he goes off towards the Arabia. Then you have as Ishak's laughter son, Jacob. And Jacob becomes Yisrael. That's interesting, just to look at Jacob's name. Jacob is the father of Yisrael. He is the father of the 12 tribes that comprise Yisrael. He had 12 sons. Those 12 sons comprise the 12 tribes of Yisrael. He is the father of Yisrael. So we're dealing now with just shy of 2000 BCE on the timeline here. Jacob's name is really interesting. It means to dig in one's heel. I did something over the weekend that I would encourage folks to do. I took you may not all be able to do this. You can do this on a grass. It'll work just as well as it did for me. I was taking my dog for a walk on the beach. And I was thinking about Jacob's name. And I said, you know, I'm going to walk down the beach digging in my heel, supplanting my heel, which is what Jacob means. And something happened. One is you lean back a little bit. You stand up straighter. Your backbone is more straight. You're walking more straight up, which is what God's entire message is to us. Stand up. Be straight up. You know, I want you to be upright in my presence, not down on your knees. The second thing that happens is your countenance raises. Your perspective raises. You see a little further. You see a little more clearly. Your sights are elevated when you do this. We'll be back in a moment, speaking of Jacob.